The Movie Hour, episode 161, December 8th, 2011. Even though this episode is quite spoiler-free, there's still some serious swearing. Enjoy the show. Gentlemen, ladies, welcome to tonight's episode, the Shia LaBeouf Raise the Roof Movie Hour. I'm your host, Greg Maloney, and I'm so glad you could join us tonight. Us being, of course, the usual fare, including my hosts, my brother James, and everyone's favorite godson, Jeff. Welcome back, gentlemen.
I don't have a godson.
You
know, No. What he's saying is I am the son of God.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes, exactly.
Then you are my favorite.
Kidding. Not in a blasphemous way, loyal listeners. Just a joke.
He's the other son. The other son.
Greg, I had conspired when you were gone to, because you had said the Shia LaBeoufs, and I actually wanted to be the Shia LaBeouf, but then you wound up saying it right, and I conspired to wait till you didn't screw it up, and then tell you, like...
Interruption ruined.
So now, can we conspire for an apology of sorts? Is that possible?
I'm going to go ahead and conspire for an apology, guys. Greg, go for it, guys.
Before we go any farther, we also have our West Coast friend back in studios. Josh, welcome back to business.
Hey, girlfriend.
Yeah, we also have live listener P with us tonight. Always a pleasure having him around.
It's great having him around.
It's a great time. And it's
really ought to be on the show. Smarter than all of us, except for maybe old Jim.
Yeah,
I'm not smart. I'm just wise.
A lot of wisdom under those brows.
Wise Jim.
I'm trying to remember who I was talking to recently, which I've pointed out multiple times that a lot of my core friends all have the letter J in their name. And I don't remember who it was. But I'm like, yeah, finally, someone else recognizes that everybody I know has a J for the beginning of their names. I don't get it.
That's our apartment in college was known as the J's. Like that. That's
four J's.
You want to go to the J's? Like, yeah, I do. Because it's cool there. Because the guys that live there are awesome.
Must
especially
be
that Jeff character.
Yeah. Must be something. Everyone's favorite godson, Jeff, is there. We should go.
I'm just imagining what every conversation around our alma mater sounded like always.
A lot like that.
I will start off the show with a reminder, which we'll talk about later too. Family Feud episode. Again, this is something we do every year. It's coming up December 18th. This is going to be a show that we do, get people together. Everybody that wants to come in, listen live or talk, we're going to do a Family Feud movie-esque episode, and it's going to be awesome. And you can
Christmas is coming.
Battle wits with the best of the best. And
this is what, the fourth that we've done?
Jesus, is it?
Yes.
It's at least the fourth.
This will be the fourth, yeah. Yep.
Pretty intense. And James will be back in the driver's seat, and I did last year, so we'll be able to compare who's better.
Like, we've been doing this for 4 years.
It's not over four.
4 years.
We started in September.
Okay, all right. No, we didn't. But but you're right, it hasn't been three. It's like 3.5 years.
Yeah. Crazy. Absolutely.
We started around Memorial Day. You always think it's Veterans Day, but it's Memorial Day.
No, Labor Day and Memorial Day are the mixed up.
Yeah. No, it was Memorial Day that we started around.
So, I would never misplace Veterans Day. That's an important part of our culture.
Misplace it.
Oh my God, what a great thing to joke about, Greg.
I'm not joking about it. That's
hilarious. Seriously, no, veterans. It's hilarious. Greg, what was that joke you had about the World War II veteran and the Korean vet walking into a bar? Because it wasn't really funny. It was offensive.
I wasn't joking. Gosh. All right. Fine. You guys are being so mean today. I've had a rough week. The Lions lost this week. MSU lost this week. It's been tough. And now you guys
My boy's just kind of leapfrogged into a BCS game.
Yeah.
MSU.
Fucking that deservedly.
Like, Wisconsin's a great team, so, you know, whatever, but the way that went down with that, the roughing the kicker, that was pretty goddamn miserable.
I immediately jokingly was sending messages to a friend of the show, Ken's brother, Andy, and I ended up saying, like, because he's just like, yeah, that's one way to lose a game, and I just immediately sent him isaiahlewis@msu.edu email address, and just how he just cannot be a popular guy on campus right now at all.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was thinking.
Like, I'm not one to blame the guy that takes the last shot in basketball or whatever, or this scenario, but it's just going to stand out no matter what you try to do. So it's just bad news.
I'm going to try to turn him into a goddamn martyr.
You could do it. You could do it. It's a possibility. But
you hear that?
It's been a tough week. As I'm trying.
It's okay. Christmas is coming. We got our tree this week.
Really? Yes. Did you get it as huge? I think we posted a picture of it on the Gunga Pit last year. Is it just?
Yeah, it's not as big. It's not as big. It's only like 10 feet tall this time. Yeah.
Dude, is it just like, is it only me that like everybody's supposed to enjoy putting up the Christmas tree and putting all that shit all over it? But I just hate it. Like, I just want it to be ready to go. I just want it to like.
I don't mind putting the lights on. It's the ornaments and stuff that I don't like because that's too long.
So you are in the market for a Christmas tree that's prepped and ready to go.
Yes, I am.
Hmm.
And actually, my lovely parents sent me out this really inexpensive but yet cool Christmas tree that you pretty much take out of the package and like kind of fold it, and then it's a bunch of lights. I'll take a picture and I'll put it on the board.
That's like an umbrella. That's pretty cool.
It's awesome.
So it has lights on it already?
It's like a spiral of lights that gets bigger toward the bottom. Okay. You may have seen such an item at a store before.
Yeah. I'm familiar with this.
At a Costco or Walmart near you, but
I had the experience of putting up my first Christmas, like my first individual no parents Christmas tree.
He's all grows up.
Was it so much more? Okay. Yeah.
So my fiance became obsessed with the idea that we needed a real live Christmas tree, which I'm kind of on board with.
God bless.
So we went looking for one, and they're not hard to find here in New York. Because this is my first Christmas in New York, there are these people that come from wooded areas of North America with apparently in trucks or something. I have no idea what the fuck happened.
There's an name for it. It's called Canada. But
to get them – well, my tree is from Canada specifically, but I talked to some people from Oregon. I talked to in different – but there are trees all over the goddamn place. And what happens is they'll set up shop. They'll bring their truck or whatever it is.
Zamboni.
I don't know what they do with the Zamboni. Drive Zambonis. And they'll – I don't know what happens to the vehicle. I'd assume it goes back to Canada or wherever, but – they leave a ton of trees on the side of the road, and I don't know if they have a license for this or not, but like on the street, they will like on the sidewalk, they will set up a Christmas tree thing, and they'll also set up a tent, and these people will sleep there. So they have a 24-hour tree shop going until Christmas or until they run out of trees. It's insane. And there are hundreds of these operations going on here in New York right now. So needless to say, I talked to a few of them and it was interesting, but
was there haggling?
There should have been, but there wasn't. So if that makes sense, I was a little too timid because I was scared because the guy was French Canadian.
You don't want to haggle with a French.
Yeah, he's gonna fuck you up, man.
The price is just gonna go up.
He'll change languages. You don't know what the fuck's going on.
Right, that's basically what happened. So, we wound up with this tree, and then we had to flip a coin to see whether I was gonna get the colored lights and make the tacky tree that I wanted. Not tacky. That's not the right word for it. The tree with character. Like I always grew up with.
Wait,
like tree.
This is you and your fiance. Fiance flipping the coin, not you and the French Canadian.
No. The French Canadian's out of the picture. We bought the tree.
I was hoping the French Canadian was still involved. Yeah.
No, French Canadian's out of the picture. Bought the tree, and then we had to get the lights. And she wanted to make like a really classy tree with like white light, all white lights, and like you know. And I wanted to make the tree with character, the tree that I grew up with, and the appropriate Christmas. Like if we had kids, there would be macaroni all over our goddamn tree, Christmas tree. And
you want the Camaro Christmas tree?
You heard it here first. Right. Jeff references kids right.
So anyway, I won that coin toss, and there are now we have a 7-foot tree.
Was there literally a coin toss?
Yes, literally a coin toss.
What'd you call?
I called heads.
Wow, and you won.
And
impressive.
I won. Yep. Heads never fails. Rhyming always fails.
Okay, so, Mr. Rhyme your titles.
So you got your cheese. You got your awesome character tree.
Yeah. 7 feet tall, 700 colored lights.
Yes.
Nice.
That's 100 per foot, dude.
By the way, the tree's name, Ernest B. Christmas Tree. After nice. Ernest Saves Christmas.
By the way, is Ernest Save Christmas in the house there? Is it in the park?
No, I don't know what to do. I haven't actually seen it in like 5 years. Like I'm
got some strings of Christmas trees of Christmas lights is that? 700.
Seven. Seven
strings. They come in hundreds? I don't know this. I don't buy Christmas lights.
Yeah, they come in hundreds. At least the ones at the drugstore here do. Yeah.
Josh hasn't had a no parents Christmas tree yet.
You have like a burning sun in the middle of your Christmas tree.
Yeah, basically.
That's how he applied them, all in just a glob in the middle.
Yeah, I just jammed them all up.
He's got a sun in the tree.
It's about 127 degrees in that sun if I leave it on for an hour. If I leave it on for two, I'm pretty sure the tree will combust.
Oh, man. All right. Christmas is fantastic. Actually, I should mention, in the studios, we don't even have a Christmas tree yet. I don't think we're going to get one. We barely just... I had to make an effort to get the interns to clean up the pumpkins, let alone the Christmas tree. So
how have you been doing?
Nothing. Nothing for the Christmas tree. We have to do, I don't know, going out and chopping down a Christmas tree.
I went to a Christmas parade for the first time ever this year.
Oh, my God.
It was awesome. Christmas yet.
I know. It was, I don't know. I guess you could say it's the holiday parade. I don't know. It was the local one in our hometown. That's... And I went with a friend of the show, B. Sikta, and his family. And there was this one point where I'm up at the do not cross line with the girls, and random floats are going by, and you got the people on the floats, and then you have all those walkers that are walking too, and just kind of saying hi and stuff. And this random guy comes up to us and leans into the kids, and he's like, "You know what, kids? Back in the back of this parade, I saw a guy with a red coat on, and he's in the back." And I immediately just turned to him and say, "Are you serious, Clark?" It was like perfect timing. I was really proud of myself right then.
Are you serious?
Walkers. It's it has been 12 minutes, I think. Maybe 11 minutes since we started the podcast. I've got the time here on the interns.
Let's go for 13. But, movies. No movies.
We need to talk about movies. We do need to talk about movies while we're here. It is the movie hour. Hey, and actually, I do have some. We're gonna keep the fun going all hour. That's what we do. But I've got a question for you guys, and this was actually something that was sparked by my endless exhaustive research for the podcast. And I was actually sending out, Christmas cards to our friends of the show, celebrities, stuff like that. And I had realized that these specific people have a thing in common, and it's right up our alley. So I want to share with you guys, and I'm sure you guys are going to get the answer, but I want to see how long it takes you guys to get it. So through this research, I realized that there are only two actors that can claim to have been killed by the Terminator, the Alien, and Predator. Do you know who those two actors are?
Wait, they were killed by all three?
Yeah, all three of those people in different films.
What was the third
one?
Okay,
wait.
Terminator, Alien, and Predator.
Terminator, do we mean any one of the multiple Terminators?
Yes, any Terminator.
One of them is Bill Paxton.
One of them is Bill Paxton. You've got it.
The other one is...
We got posts here. P's got the other one, I think.
Of course he's got the other one. It's P.
Huh. Predator, Terminator, and Alien?
Who's been
Jesse
killed?
The Body Ventura.
I wish. I figured you guys could get this one. As soon as I read it, I'm like, man, that is an awesome little trivia fact. Got to go with this.
Michael Biehn?
Michael Biehn is not the answer, but that is, you got Michael Biehn in Alien and Terminator. You got Terminator 1 and Aliens.
The fact that there's one person that's been killed by both is astounding. Or
all three.
Yeah, astounding. Just astounding. The fact that there are two is beyond coincidence. I'm going to reassess my religious beliefs.
PA, do you have the second one? You can feel free to answer it if you got it.
I don't know shit.
So before that,
not getting this.
Bill Paxton was definitely killed in Aliens, being one of the Commando Army guys. Terminator being Terminator being one of the gang leader guy at the club, and then Predator 2, which is everybody's favorite Predator. He was
definitely
as well. But the second actor, James, are you giving up?
Yeah.
Is Lance Henriksen. Lance Henriksen is the
one.
Because Terminator 1, he was like the...
He was the cop.
Yeah, he was the cop in the beginning. He was killed in Alien vs. Predator by the Predator. And then in Alien 2 or 3, however you want to decide how he died in that, was the Lance Henriksen death from the Alien. So
that's kind of surprising because he's a total badass.
Yeah.
Seems like he would have killed at least one of those things.
Exactly.
not have been defeated by any of those. But yeah, after I read that, I'm like, man, this is perfect. These guys need to know about this.
The
but
real
yeah.
Lance Henriksen might have been killed by the alien, but definitely not the fucking Predator, all right?
It's funny you bring that up, because I was... the interns, of course, that put together the episode, I was talking with them. They were just torn apart by trying to decide if they wanted to put in your comments about the real Peter Stormare getting what he would do in episodes in this TV show and everything, and I said, decided it wasn't going to make it. But
it's all right.
It was,
all right. Hey, you know, this Christmas, do we want to let the interns actually do a show? They keep asking.
It's possible. We might have to hear them. That'd be interesting. I just don't know if we can let them off the hook yet. It's only been 3.5 years, like you mentioned. I just don't know.
That'd be like letting 2-year-olds run Congress.
So
equally terrible, or is it...
Oh man. But anyways, that was the movie trivia I wanted to go with. It was really the only hoopla worth mentioning. We got some things we want to comment about later, but let's get to the movie reviews. I think we started with Jeff last week. So James, how about we start with you this week?
All right. I saw a few movies this week. I did manage to knock another partial one off the list. That was off of our infamous list. So yep. Down to 4, I think. Down to 4.
Jesus.
You guys are crushed.
What? So let's get on record right now. When do you expect to have it done, the list?
Not until next year, because we're kind of on hiatus.
Right, right.
Holiday schedule. So I'm hoping to be done by the end of January.
All right. It's on record. It's on record. Continue.
Okay. So... me and Greg went to the theater as well. It was me seeing some movies from our list. We went to go see Muppets. And yeah, it was a nice film. The premise is 3 fans of the Muppets go to the old Muppet Theater to, you know, go check it out, take the tour, that sort of thing. And they find out that an evil oil baron is going to knock down the old theater and drill for oil that's he's convinced is underneath it. And the only way to save the theater is for the Muppets to raise $10 million so they can basically buy their way back into the contract that is locking them out. And so the 3 fans go and hunt down Kermit, and from there they decide to get the band back together to do one last big show and a telethon and try and get, you know, come back to prominence. The movie reminded me of the old Muppet movie, so that was good. I've definitely had a nostalgia factor there. It's got all the song and dance numbers you remember from the old ones, celebrity cameos, silly jokes. And I imagine the nostalgia, you know, definitely swayed me a lot, but I still found the movie pretty amusing. It's not like hilarious or anything like that, but I definitely had a grin on my face most of the time I was watching it. I particularly liked a lot of the background jokes. There were some jokes where they'd be focused on one scene and in the background, somebody cracks some other joke that you may or may not catch, which I found kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like there's one where they're got all these celebrities kind of chipping in and doing like answering phones for the telethon. And they show like a wide shot of, you know, all the celebrities sitting there. And I just happened to focus on Neil Patrick Harris, who I love. And he's talking to the guy on the other line. He's like, yeah, I don't know why I'm not hosting this thing either. I'm much better. You know, like he's having his own conversation. And I'm wondering how many of the other conversations were pretty funny too and stuff like that. But there was a lot of that. There was a lot of fourth wall jokes, like kind of talking about the movie as a movie as opposed to, you know, being in the movie themselves, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a giant reference to like, is this movie like, going to be are we going to be popular, a.k.a. is this movie going to be popular and what are we going to do about it? And yeah, it's
yeah. And, you know, they'd have an explosion like, oh, I didn't think we had that in the budget. And well, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was good. I did enjoy it. I love the ending song. The ending song was awesome and also nostalgic. But yeah, it was pretty good. I do want to call out Eric Bolling, I believe his name is, from the Fox Business Channel. apparently they had a story that aired recently, and he pretty much was bashing the Muppets for planting the seeds of class warfare among children. Just because these guys were going up against an oil baron.
Yeah, oil baron Tex Richmond, man. I'm on his side. Come on, we can't just make these guys bad guys all over the place.
Yes, because that was the key ingredient there was, you know, him being an oil baron, not him knocking down the theater or anything.
Right.
So I found it funny that, you know, Fox Business Channel was quick to just bash anything.
I thought
There were, like, you found that surprising?
Yes, yes. No, actually, kind of, yeah. I'm like, wow, that's a new low, basically, is how I felt.
But yeah, talk about something. And the Muppets, yeah. The Muppets are big. Maybe the Muppets decided to say, hey, you guys should talk about the Muppets today and how it...
really, Fox is contributing to class warfare by tearing down the Muppets, because the Muppets are huge. That's bullshit.
I should mention, Jason Segel, who co-wrote this, stars in it pretty much as... the brother of the Muppet, who's, I even forget the Muppet's name, Walter. It's Gary and Walter, and I love all the basic names, Gary, Walter, Mary, played by Amy Adams. Chris Cooper plays Tex Richmond, the bad guy. Beyond that, you have a lot of bad guys, like, not a lot of bad guys, but a lot of small players in this. There's Rashida Jones, who sort of plays like a network executive person in it that ends up giving the Muppets a chance for the telethon to get the millions they need to get the theater back. There's Alan Arkin, which actually was kind of weird.
I like Alan Arkin.
He's a tour guide in the beginning of the movie. The cameos in this movie are great. Like, you're going to be looking for the cameos at being a Muppet movie, and it was distracting at times, like looking through crowds trying to find him, but the cameos are all pretty obvious, and great job by Alan Arkin. I don't know if they made him look that old or if he's just nowadays.
He's like the befuddled, disinterested tour guide. It was kind of funny.
He's pretty goddamn old at this
point. Yeah, I mean, he must be. Ken Jeong, Zach Galifianakis, you've got like Sarah Silverman. There are a lot of people that play themselves, but those are people that play different characters. I guess Jack Black probably has the biggest cameo, you'd say. Maybe Rashida Jones or Jack Black. I guess Rashida Jones is an actual serious...
God, Rashida Jones is so wonderful.
But Jack ends up being the co-host, the guest celebrity host for the telethon, even though they kidnap him for it. So it's...
Right.
Everybody involved does a pretty good job, and I think the writing for the movie, the story is pretty good. Like you mentioned before, this idea that it's a movie that's just... pointing to the fact that the Muppets, are they popular? We're going to find out. And it's interesting to see that unravel. I like the story's simple. And I had my, even though the Muppets weren't exactly, a lot of it was still even before me, like the Muppets came out early 80s. I was born early 80s. I obviously wasn't watching the Muppets when I was, but, the only thing that I didn't like, which, I remember from my childhood, is the rats got no play in this movie, dude. The rats showed up a couple times, but there's no Rizzo the rat. They get no dialogue, and that kind of hurt me. That kind of hurt me inside. And
Swedish Chef was in.
I think Rizzo. Yeah, Swedish Chef was there.
Swedish, of course he was.
But Rizzo, I think, got one scene or something. That was about it.
They got in. They got shown a couple times, but they.
I was amazed that Statler and Waldorf got to walk around.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
In the very beginning was
like one
time.
Scene.
The very beginning, they're explaining to Tex Richmond about the contract and they're involved. Oh, that was actually the other thing I was going to mention. I don't remember the bear and that like English dragging looking guy are sort of like bad Muppets in the movie. Mm-hmm. I don't remember them from the series at all.
I remember the bear. I don't remember the English.
Yeah.
Thing, whatever the hell that thing was. And I don't remember the giant blue guy that showed up in the background.
Up too. Like they must have existed. Would they really create a new Muppet other than Walter for this?
Yeah, as far as I know, the only new Muppet was Walter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but I really liked it. And again, the Muppets weren't all my bag back in the day, but I definitely had the rush of
And that bear had a lot of those little side jokes that if you weren't paying attention could slip right by too.
Right. Yep. There was like Zach Galifianakis. I don't know if I mentioned Zach Galifianakis is in it. He plays a hobo guy, which does a great job in the end of the movie. It's
nothing funnier than homelessness.
It makes a joke just right at that. He's like, at some point they're putting on the telethon. There's nobody in the theater other than Zach Galifianakis, who plays Hobo Joe. And he just goes, "Hobo Joe's here. What am I, invisible?" Like,
wow.
You know, they get away with that because homeless people can't go to the movies.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Who's going to stand up for him?
Yeah, but I think it's really...
apparently, but not, you know.
anybody that was a fan of the shows back in the day, I think, is going to love this. I'm curious how, like, the new generation is going
to... Yeah, that's what I'm curious about, too.
But it's a good movie. I think anybody older than 25 years old is gonna like it, and I'm curious. Like, it did decently well. I'm guessing we're gonna see something else of it come out after this, but I think the Jason Segel did a great job co-writing it, and I'm the director, actually, who hasn't really done anything other than some TV stuff, James Bobbin. It didn't look that bad. One quick criticism I'll mention: and James, you and I talked about this.
Yep.
Steps into the musical portions of it, just some of them just seem so immediate. Like, okay, yeah, we're dialogue, we're talking about story plot. Boom, we're into the musical part.
Yeah. Section. Even like when jokes were like visual jokes, they'd cut like their cut was off. Their comedy
beat
was off.
Weird. Some of the pacing was weird, but I like the movie overall. Go see it. It's awesome. But yeah, this actually rolls into my review, which I had caught a new movie this week. I call it caught Hugo, which is a very, very important movie. Very important.
Can you, well, I guess it's on me. So if you want to do spoilers away, but I plan on seeing this movie.
I'm not going to spoil it. So anybody that wants to see this movie, you're set to go. I'm sure people that are checking this out might know a few basic things about the story, so I will mention that, but I'll keep spoilers out of it. But yeah, it just released. It's the latest Martin Scorsese movie, and it's safe to say that he's never done a movie like this before. Like, it's sort of like just an action drama. It's not no bloodshed, no deaths, stabbings, anything like that in this movie.
Main character is a kid, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, main character is a kid. The movie follows the young boy named Hugo Cabret. And by the way, if I slaughter like one of these French names, please forgive me. But it's played by Asa Butterfield, who lives in a Paris train station and keeps the clocks there working in order. He was pretty much orphaned after his like clockmaker father died in fire at a museum he worked at, and he was pretty much left to his alcoholic uncle, sort of like Braveheart, Hugo, who pretty much so lives in this train station. He steals all these items around the train station to survive, and he's working on a project to repair this automaton. He ends up getting caught. He's stealing these parts for it. He gets caught by this toy store owner. I think you'd pronounce it Zorsch Melier, who's George
Melier.
Yeah, Melier, Zorsch Melier, played by Ben Kingsley, who does a great job. Zorsch tells Hugo, as he's got him there, like he's got his arm pinned, to empty his pockets, or he's going to be reported to the station inspector, who is played by Sacha Baron Cohen, who does another great job. At this point, Hugo is emptying his pockets, and he reveals this notebook with sketches that his father made of this automaton that he's working on. And this makes Zorsch very emotional, and this is pretty much like drives Hugo to get this notebook back, and ultimately like revealing the relationship between like his dead father and this toy store owner, played by Ben Kingsley. I should mention the movie, like I guess the movie ultimately is it's like a story about film and the imagination, which is mainly also this story about Zorsch Melier. Scorsese does a good job of showing like Melier's, I'd say like his, it's almost like his mind for creativity. He was one of the guys that initially he didn't create film. He ended up seeing it like displayed at a fair. And I'm trying to remember what brothers he ended up seeing playing a movie of the first film of a train just coming into a station. It's pretty much called Train Coming Into the Station. And he realized the power that this could do, because he started as like a magician and just trying to create illusions. He's like, this is awesome. I'm going to take this on.
The Lumiere brothers.
Yeah, you have the Lumiere brothers. Thank you. His real life story involves this, and this is the character played by Ben Kingsley. And you get to see his sort of his life unravel and be part of this story. And you get to see Hugo's part, pretty much relationship with him. Chloe Moretz, I know she has a middle name that I'm not mentioning, but is plays sort of Ben Kingsley's granddaughter or goddaughter, and she has a relationship with Hugo during the movie. She does a good job. I would say I always want to call him Hugo now, but Asa Butterfield, Chloe Moretz do a decent job in this, but the people that really shine in this movie are the adults. Like Ben Kingsley does a great job. Sacha Baron Cohen being this inspector at the train station. You get to see a little bit of his relationships with everybody in this. You sort of have a situation like Tom Hanks did in the airport movie, The Terminal, where there are other people that are part of this train station daily, and you get to see their relationships going on during the movie, which is kind of interesting. You have Christopher Lee being like part of a bookstore, Emily Mortimer being like the flower girl selling flowers at the train station, and a couple others. The big role actually that stuck out was Michael Stuhlbarg's role, who's from A Serious Man. He plays sort of he pretty much plays like an author professor who is a standing authority on Georges Méliès' work that you meet during the movie. Very interesting. I saw it on 3D and I didn't like the 3D very much. It was distracting. That was one of the things that sort of stuck out I didn't like about it. If you're going to go see the movie, I would just spare the expense and just go see it normal. The 3D was kind of a not all that impressive. The other thing that kind of bothered me that Scorsese did was in the beginning of the movie, you know, the first shot of a movie has just like a, I don't know, sort of like a sway, a very important feel to set the pace of the movie. And all it is a time lapse in the beginning of the Paris area, like a over like eagle-eyed view of the Paris city and the traffic. And it sort of turns it into to show how mechanical it is. And then it goes into the train station, and the train station is a giant CGI of trains and people and the camera tracking through the middle. And I expected more from Scorsese. Like it's almost all CGI. And I expected him to do something awesome with the camera and lighting and to just do a, like, I know tracking shots are kind of a pain in the ass and it's not, you know, that doesn't dictate how good a director is, but I expected a little more something other than a giant CGI sequence for the first 30 seconds of the movie.
Seems like there's a lot of CGI in this, at least based off the trailers that I saw.
Really felt that this movie was like almost like the Roger Rabbit of CGI.
I think there's a lot, but it surprised me to be just the entire first chunk of the movie. Yes, there's a lot of CGI in it. I just expected a lot of it. Like the relationships between the characters are all like, I think anything in the train station, none of that is, but anything where they show the automaton and when they're actually showing during the movie, they do a couple of recreations of Georges Méliès' work. And they actually show some of the original footage, which is really cool. And you get an idea. It's kind of funny. You get an idea that this guy, this, like, again, played by Ben Kingsley, he's the important part of this movie. Hugo, who it's named after, the kid, is just pretty much a vessel to get into that story. And that's one other thing I think they sort of failed at was they try to split the time between them. Even though you can tell that this one character by Ben Kingsley is just awesome and you just want to know more about him, they sort of stay on Hugo for a lot of it. And I think that during a lot of those scenes when they're showing the past and doing a couple of recreations, none of that's CGI, but anything in the clockwork, any of that stuff, all CGI. But
yeah, I saw Scorsese do the Jon Stewart show, and yeah. he was talking all about Malay the entire time, so he's definitely a Malay fan and how fucking Edison screws him over by basically getting the rights to all his movies and making money off of it.
Yeah, so. Well, they get into a little bit of that in the movie. It's not 100% historically accurate, obviously, but it's you'll get a chunk of that in the movie. It's a good movie. It's I don't know where I'd rank it on the Scorsese work, but it's different for him. He does a good job, and the story ultimately is interesting. It's just yeah, I actually expected more. I was a little underwhelmed by the movie. And maybe it was the 3D. There was also, I think there was a problem with the sound at the theater, which didn't help, but
I hate that. Yeah. My biggest pet peeve probably in theaters.
But yeah.
Seriously, bigger than obnoxious assholes?
Yeah, I don't run into those very much for some reason. I've been pretty lucky.
Very lucky.
But again, going back to like Chloe Moretz and Asa Butterfield play the majority of this beyond Ben Kingsley, and they do a decent job. I think at sometimes you can tell they're a little struggling with their acting, but all the adults that come in rock and roll, dude. Awesome. But yeah, go see it. Go see the Muppets too. Both pretty good movies. Definitely don't go see Twilight, even though I can't really say that since I haven't seen it, but
you can say it.
Right. You can say it. Go ahead. So Jeff, a movie review on your end.
Yeah. I saw, not as new and not as serious, I guess. I mean, even though Muffet's clearly not serious, but I saw probably the least serious movie that I'll see all year. It was fun though. It was all right. A movie called 30 Minutes or Less. And I'm still kind of confused why it was called 30 Minutes or Less. The main character, Jesse Eisenberg, is a pizza boy who works for pizza boy is a derogatory term for a job that I've done before. A pizza delivery driver.
Yeah.
Who,
you got pissed when people called you a pizza boy? Is that?
I don't know. No, but, you know, pizza boy doesn't sound like a nice thing to call somebody.
Right.
So let's just stay away from it. Yeah. He's a pizza delivery driver, but that's not really a major part of the plot. I mean, like, it kind of factors into it, but the 30 minutes or less is a reference to that, and there really could have been 100 other things to call this,
right?
Because the plot has very little to do with him delivering pizzas. He winds up in this situation where he's clearly the main character, but there's sort of the side story of Danny McBride and Nick Swardson are like friends, and they're trying to get $100,000 to pay this guy to kill Danny McBride's dad so that Danny McBride can inherit his dad's lottery money, which is kind of funny. Danny McBride basically plays his Eastbound and Down character that he always plays, the brazen, ignorant asshole.
Dude. Have you seen Due Date and his role in that?
We saw it together.
Okay. God. Oh, yeah. I just want to make sure that his role in that never ceases to amaze me. Sorry. Continue.
Greg, remember when we were friends?
Yeah. Hey, sorry. It was a long time ago when you ditched me. You ditched me.
Ouch. Okay.
No.
So, they're trying to get this $100,000, and they realize that robbing a bank's the way to do it. But they're scared to rob a bank themselves, so they order a pizza and wind up strapping a bomb, because Nick Swartzen's obsessed with explosives, to Jesse Eisenberg, the main character, like knocking him out and strapping a bomb to him and saying, hey, if you don't get us $100,000 in 12 hours, or I think it might be 10 hours, you're going to explode, and that's that. But if you do give us $100,000, then we'll give you your money. And there are some funny parts. Again, if you like the Eastbound and Down character, who doesn't? But if you like that, he's very funny. Danny McBride is.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of really stupid, like, dumbass comments that are pretty good. Nick Swardson, he's pretty funny in it. Aziz Ansari, I like Aziz Ansari probably an inordinate amount, but he plays Jesse Eisenberg's best friend and like is helping him rob the bank and stuff. And the comedy of this movie, the bulk of the comedy comes with these two guys that are like not really normally wrapped up. And we've seen this before, not normally wrapped up in these types of situations,
fish out of water situation,
right? Fish out of, like, okay, now I've got to go rob a bank. I got to steal a car. I've got to rob a bank. So, like, I'm going to go steal his car from this guy that I know, sort of. And so, like, I'm going to have the ski mask on and be like, oh, I'm scary. I'm stealing your car and I'm scary. Thank you very much. You know, like, jokes like that, which are, you know, sort of funny. You get the idea. And then they're robbing the bank, and they're like trying to act really like badass, like gangsters that you might see in the movies. And the jokes basically revolve around that. And it's an hour and a half of relatively funny stuff.
I was gonna say, was this 10 hours too long, like Pineapple Express was with Danny McBride?
No, it wasn't. Actually, I wanted to make a reference to that though, because this movie just ends abruptly, like conflict over, boom, done, movie over, like literally roll credits, like conflict over, roll credits. And I thought about Pineapple Express, how at the end of it, like the three people meet up. I think who was it? It was Seth Rogen, Danny McBride, and
Franco.
Franco, like, meet up at that diner, and they're like, oh, we're friends now, like, that's cool. Like, that was sort of like, even though that movie went too long, like, that was sort of a funny way to end the movie. And this one, it was just literally within 35 seconds of the conflict being over, the credits roll, and it's like, oh, okay, like, so the movie's over, cool, I'm gonna go to bed. And that was something. But
so Jesse Eisenberg plays his plain straight man self, and
yeah,
this,
oh yeah,
this team of comedians. Yeah,
it's the jokes, a lot of the jokes spring around him moving away from the straight man self and acting boldly and so on and so forth,
right?
Because yeah.
Directed by the same person that did Zombieland, was he pretty much the same character from Zombieland?
Exact same character.
All right. Yeah, pretty much. Figured. And we've decided Nick Swardson's funny in movies. Like, has that been?
I mean,
we decided
almost everything he's in is Adam Sandler related.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tough to say.
Is it him or is it Sandler? Who knows? We can't tell who's
well,
the problem.
I'm saying
I liked him in Almost Famous myself.
This he was good in.
Right. I see what I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. The ones he's involved in with Sandler are questionable. But and we should mention Fred Ward's in this from the Tremors series, and also from who we always talk about is Dead, who's not.
You'd be remiss not to.
But anyhow, why'd you end up catching the movie? This was another Redbox?
Unfortunately, it wasn't. My fiance and I were hard looking for a movie, and we looked at Redbox, and the Redbox was out of movies that we thought we could both watch. So we went home and looked at the on demand, and we actually paid like $4 to watch this, which was too much, but. That's okay.
Interesting. Yeah, that's weird because I was actually like, this movie was on my radar a little bit. You got Jesse Eisenberg and Danny McBride.
It's not unwatchable. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's kind of funny, but $4? Come on, man.
Yeah, come on. Come on. Dean, have you seen any interesting films recently out on the West Coast?
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than Gremlins or.
No, I didn't catch any new movies. They had I don't know, some kind of Star Wars marathon last weekend, and they had some kind of Indiana Jones marathon this weekend. So I actually
re-caught. I saw the Indiana Jones marathon and re-caught Last Crusade because I hadn't seen it in a very long time. And
I like
it was
Last
all right.
Crusade. I like
it's all right. It's
Last
good.
Crusade, all right.
I like Last Crusade.
Yeah.
No Temple of Doom.
It's no Temple of Doom. We were just quoting it yesterday or something. Like, this is how we say goodbye in Germany or something. Like that.
What the fuck was going on in your life that you were doing that?
The marathon was on, and I was quoting the movie.
Oh man!
Oh, you guys were okay. Yeah. Okay, all right.
It'd be great to walk up to somebody and just jack them in the face and then say that, like. This is how we say goodbye in Germany, asshole.
Dr. Jones.
Yeah.
God. And which brings us to the Star Wars original, well, not original, sorry, the first three, episode 1, 2, and 3 Star Wars movies coming back in 3D re-release.
Yeah, whatever. They should
it's
never have done
about
that.
Time.
It's about time.
It's been a few minutes since he
it's
made
the most
money
pathetic
off this.
Thing I've ever seen. Like
I don't...
Leave that fucking shit alone. Like, haven't we put that shit through enough?
Fuck those up as much as you want. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't know if I stress enough about the Hugo movie, but the 3D didn't impress me there. And the movies that aren't even being shot prepped for 3D.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised you went the 3D route on that one.
Scorsese was talking it up so much recently. Like, yeah, 3D, man. Like, this is going to be my new thing. Awesome, 3D. I love it. And
hey,
I was waiting.
Greg. Today I'll either do this podcast for $5 like I normally do, or I'll do it in 3D for $7. And the 3D is awesome.
All right. Well, I didn't think he was going to backstab me like that. Him and I are personal friends. I didn't expect that to happen, but it was something we're going to have to talk about in our sessions later on. Martin, we're going to have to talk about that. But yeah, anyways, 3D, man. What gives? But
Piranha 3D was pretty good.
I'm off it.
Piranha 3D. Yeah.
Jaws 3D.
Jaws 3D. Jaws 5000.
Jaws 3D was like 20 years ahead of its time. Awesome.
I saw Jaws 3D probably three years ago in 2D, and it was just amazing because the only like almost all of it's just a 2D movie, and then every once in a while there's a very obvious 3D moment that you're like, oh, that would have been really terrible in 3D. Like,
terrible.
Awesome. I meant to say.
I forget what movie it was of the the Nightmare on Elm Street series when Freddy dies again and his head like blows up toward the screen in 3D. It's the last part of the movie. Yes, 3D, awesome.
3D. Yeah.
Freddy Krueger's gut, like his face looks like guts. I wonder what his guts look like.
Faces.
Because that's the question of the day. That's the Parker Posey play along.
Yeah, that should have been the Parker Posey play along.
Which is what we were going to discuss now. The Parker Posey play along, people. It's my favorite feature. I don't know about Jeff or James's, but my favorite feature on the podcast. Our question of the week, and last question last week was my question. It was from moi, and it was, what's the most down-to-earth movie you've ever seen? And other than my answer, Sideways, there are quite a few others, and one A couple shout-outs, actually. A Family Stone got multiple votes, which I haven't seen, which apparently has Rachel McAdams in it, which I have to see.
No, and, you don't. I saw this on an airplane.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Really?
Not good.
Down to Earth, though. Did it answer? Did it fit the...
Sure, fine. Down to Earth. Just like every other romantic comedy piece of shit. Come on.
We did have... The two voters were two girls, so maybe you got something there.
Oh.
I'm just saying, romantic comedy, girls like romantic comedies, it's a possibility, maybe. But I'm going to have to see it. It's got two votes. I'm going to have to see it. Indian Summer, I'm happy that made it on there.
Indian Summer got 1.5 votes because friend of the show, Jarv, was going to answer that until I told him that it was taken already.
No shit.
I still haven't seen that movie. I probably should.
It's worth it. It's worth it. It's Diane Lane in her younger years, who's still hot.
And some guy who got like killed by the Predator and Terminator and Alien.
Yep.
Paxton?
Yep, yeah. He's in it. He stars. I'm trying to remember. Like, it is sort of more of a... and I've lost the word. Multiple people in a movie starring. It's a
ensemble
cast.
Yay!
well, yeah, Bill Paxton, I would say, is the main guy, right? Like, in that movie, probably? The main dude?
If you were to pick one, I suppose.
But a lot of good answers. I appreciate it. Appreciate everybody that takes time to answer. You can answer on gungabit.com or also on the Facebook page. Look for the movie hour. There were other couple shout outs, Garden State, Adventureland, Juno, Up in the Air, even got a mention. But yeah.
Are these all Facebook responses?
Those were friend of the show Dan's, and also we got Ryan on there. Yep, Facebook responses. But
awesome.
Also, a shout out to Freaks and Geeks. The TV show was also mentioned, which is a very good TV show.
I love that. I actually got into a discussion with a coworker about that show recently about how
I need
bad
to rewatch
it
that one.
How badass it was, and then how what was it the later series in college? It was
Undeclared.
Yeah. I was calling it Undecided, but that was in the movie Undeclared. Yeah, but yeah. A great question, if I do say so myself, and which gets us to Jeff's question of the week. Jeff, what you got?
Mine is fairly simple, I think, and I hope we don't get a lot. Well, I hope we get good answers and not a lot of repeats. But what Christmas or holiday movie really, really brings you back? And it can be a movie, or it can be like one of those TV spots, like say Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or something like that.
Right. So it brings you back, as in reminds you of your childhood, very nostalgic.
Right, like what gives you like that Christmas, that old-timey Christmas feel? Not which one is your favorite, because Scrooge is my favorite. I do love Christmas Vacation, like, but that's not what I'm going for. I'm not going for like which one do you watch because it gives you the most, like, you laugh and it's the best movie. Which one gives you
reminds you of the good old days?
Yeah, which one gives you that good old days, old-timey feel?
So yours is Ernest Saves Christmas.
I was actually gonna go with that, but as much as I love that, I love How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Not the Jim Carrey shit one. But the old fashioned Dr. Seuss, You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. I absolutely love that, and I think I would watch it once a month if I had access to it. And I think that the musical numbers are amazing. I think that the message is clear and wonderful, and I think that the character is. It's like a new Greek myth, and it's archetypical, and it's wonderful. I really, really like it.
So this can be, it doesn't have to be a holiday movie, or does it? It can be a
holiday movie. I mean, if you got a movie that reminds you of Christmas,
right. Like if I say Chucky reminds me of when I was 5 years old, because I was scared the shit out of it.
But the Christmas aspect, or the holiday aspect.
Okay.
It can be any holiday though, right?
Right. Well, I mean,
I think he's referring to Christmas, but he wants
the
to holiday.
Holiday.
The holidays.
Okay.
He's trying to be PC.
The PC holiday, not any holiday. Gotcha.
Right.
I have an answer. It's not actually a holiday movie, but it does remind me of the holidays. So that's legitimate, right?
Die Hard.
Definitely.
Is it Die Hard?
So this, and I don't know how widely this movie was circulated. I think it was like somehow it was like sold through McDonald's or something. I don't remember exactly how you got a hold of this, but there was a Puff the Magic Dragon movie.
Yeah.
Do you know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that? That me and my sister would all, like, when we were younger, we'd watch it all the time. But immediately after, like, my first pick would probably be How the Grinch Stole Christmas, if it wasn't already taken. But immediately after watching that movie, we would always put that Puff the Magic Dragon movie on, and we'd watch that every single Christmas. Just me and my sister, while, like, the parents were off, you know, talking to family or whatever, me and my sister would just pretty much stroll up on the floor, like, lay down on our stomachs and just hands, or like heads in our hands, just watch that movie on Christmas, and it was fucking awesome.
Now, I'm thinking, I had to look it up because I was trying to remember the exact title. It's not just called Puff's Magic Dragon, right? It's called Pete's Dragon?
No, this is a Puff the Magic Dragon. There is a Pete's Dragon, but it's Pete's a totally Dragon's separate not... movie.
Okay.
It's a Puff the Magic Dragon movie, and it's about Jackie Paper. Or it's about a kid named Jackie Draper who, like, makes a paper copy of him, and they call him Jackie Paper. And they go through all sorts of adventures and shit to save.
You're crazy.
To save
I've never heard this.
Well, I bought this movie for my sister last Christmas because it reminded me of Christmas.
That's awesome. A. B, is the end of that movie incredibly depressing, like the end of the song?
The middle of the movie is incredibly depressing, but the end of it's happy.
It's so sad.
It is.
It's a sad story.
Yeah, it
is. You claim this the only way to get it back in the day was through McDonald's, like meals.
I think it was somehow sold through McDonald's. Like, I think you got a copy of it for like $10 or something when you went in. Like, you can, like, it's on YouTube. You can find this movie on YouTube.
How long is it? Is it like 20 minutes, or is
it's
it
like half an hour or so? Okay.
Yeah, all right.
Probably a little less. It's like, it's worth a watch. I would. I like seeing it through the lens of today. I don't know if I would really go crazy for it or anything, but.
This is the reason we invite Josh, because this is a great answer.
It was a great, great movie, and we would watch it every Christmas after the Grinch Stole Christmas. After the whole family watched Grinch Stole Christmas, me and my sister would get together and watch this.
Gosh. James, do you have an answer?
Yeah, I'm just trying to decide which one. One of mine is obviously going to be one of the claymation ones from my youth.
Right, which one?
I think I'd have to go with I probably have to go with the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Okay.
Yukon Cornelius.
Because of Yukon Cornelius, yes, yeah. Yes.
He's awesome.
Dude, my favorite part of that movie is when he chucks his pickaxe up and, like, picks it up and flicks it to see if it's gold.
Yeah,
like,
that's how he determines whether there's silver or gold. And he sings that song,
silver and gold. I think my favorite part of that entire thing is when he says, the thing about bumbles bounce. I love it so much. I don't know what, like, I just think it's phenomenal.
I just caught a glimpse of it recently, and I totally forgot about, like, the Lion King guy who, like,
boards
over the Misfit Toy Island.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm like, wow, I totally forgot about this guy. This is awesome.
Dude, I totally forgot about this.
I remember being actually scared and stuff when I was young, so it definitely evokes emotion for, you know, nostalgia for me on that one.
Good answer.
I Claymation is probably the way I have to go, too. We had all the...
We were a big Claymation family.
Yeah, we had that was VCR, VHS taped, ready to go. One I would go with, the one with it's Burgermeister and the
Burgermeister Meisterburger.
Yeah, was Santa Claus is Coming to Town? Is that that one, or is that a different one? What was the name of that one?
Yeah, that might be the.
There was the Jack Frost one, but that
wasn't that was different.
Jack Frost was the one then.
No, that wasn't that one.
It wasn't, because that was the one with the Kniggets. But Meisterburger was Santa Claus. I got two movies in my head.
Yeah, the King of Nuggets and the Burgermeister together.
All right, well, I'm going with Burgermeister then, which is the Santa Claus is Coming to Town one, I'm pretty sure. The Busy from, that's not Santa Claus Coming to Town, that's from the Frosty the Snowman movie. That's a close second.
That's a classic. Yeah,
that is a good one.
That's a close second.
Busy.
Happy birthday. We're gonna have to get that on audio, but that's a very close second. I want to say that, but
that's a really good one.
Talent. He's made of Christmas snow.
Yeah.
Yep.
If I had to pick anything that wasn't a straight TV movie, would definitely be Christmas Vacation. That was around, I guess, what was that, like a 91 movie, or even
earlier than that, I would think, but maybe I'm wrong.
But That was definitely a part of the very initial part of our.
What cracks me up a lot about Christmas Vacation is they do that whole little cartoon intro and outro. Yeah. Like, what the hell is this?
So crap, yeah. By the way, the entire time I was doing the tree, just little full, a lot of sap. I kept saying over and over, over. Like, I probably said that 1,000 times. Little full, a lot of sap.
Yeah. 89 was Christmas Vacation, so. I was a 7-year-old man at that point. It was definitely a part of our, a staple of our holiday, our Christmas. But I I'm going with Santa Claus is Coming to Town with the I was about to just call it Snow White, but the Frosty the Snowman being a close second in the TV straight to TV series. But very good question, Jeff. And I guess one last time, state it for the boards, and we'll wrap this baby up.
What holiday, and by holiday, I mean December holiday, movie or straight-to-TV special, a la Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, makes you feel nostalgic for your childhood?
Awesome. The question, again, will be at the boards, gongapit.com, and also on the Movie Hour page on Facebook. One last time, should mention, Family Feud episode, December 18th. Everybody is welcome. And it'll be a blast, per usual, 4 p.m. Eastern. And, yeah, if you guys are interested, I'll be on early. I can answer technical questions. We do it on Skype. It's very easy, very simple. And we'll rock and roll. And I guess, yeah, that's it for our podcast today. James, Jeff, thank you so much once again for your input.
Thanks for stopping by, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it.
Drive safe, people.
That's right. Driving safe is important. Josh, what do you think? Driving safe?
You know, it's all right.
It's for the birds. For the birds. Thank you.
That is for the birds.
For the birds. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, live listeners. The Shia LaBeouf Raise the Roof Movie Hour. Catch you next time. I thought you were talking about Pete's Dragon.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but it's totally different.
Do you guys even know Pete's Dragon?
Yeah, Pete's Dragon.
I actually know Pete's Dragon. We heard about it from old fuckers like that.
I was going to say, I don't know about anybody who watched that besides people my age.
So, Greg said Shia LaBeouf's Raise the Roof. I want Shia LaBeouf Raise the Roof. But I think I might wait for him to finally get the intro right and then tell him that he got it wrong.
Absolutely. Anything to ruin the episode.
Right, well, that's what I go for, basically, everybody. And even when I failed, Josh, you fucking succeed.
Fidelity
producer. And there he is. Okay.
What did I do?
Shut up.
Shut up. What did I do?
It was a bad joke.
Jim, tell me what I missed.
The camp sworn to secrecy.
What did I miss? Tell me. I've got it recorded. Fine, I've got it recorded. Doesn't matter.
That's about enough.
We've used LaBeouf.
God damn it.
Dude, I came up with an awesome name while I was falling asleep the other night, but I couldn't remember what it was in the morning.
You gotta write that shit down.
I was in bed, like, half passed out. It was in that quasi-deer dream stage.
You gotta get a little more work there.
Next time I'll write it on my cock.
That way no one will ever find it.